This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Craig Norris, and I want to invite you to check out the R330. It's kind of like Quirks and Quarks, except I don't talk about space or science or anything like that. Instead, I play the week's best Canadian indie music. Head over to cbcradio3.com for all of the info.
There's been a lot of talk of political change over the past year. That's got me thinking about another era of political change, the 1960s. In the 1960s and early 1970s, there were a number of pieces of legislation passed in the Canadian House of Commons by the then Liberal governments of Prime Ministers Pearson and Trudeau that profoundly changed the way we Canadians think of ourselves today. Many of them were not popular pieces of legislation, and looking back, you can't help but have big feelings for the foresight and courage of those parliaments, or I can't anyway. It was the courage of those parliaments and the politicians who were in the House at that time that gave me my great respect for the idea of public service and for those who put themselves forward for public office. I say courage because many of these were controversial proposals, proposals that asked a lot of the citizenry. They asked Canadians to abandon the way we did certain things and change the way we thought about others. And these were big things, things that people had big feelings about. There was, no surprise, determined opposition. Requests to change always generate opposition, and I well remember the fierce arguments. But more importantly, I remember, in the face of the opposition, how our parliamentarians served us by taking the lead, by sticking to their guns, and consequently by dragging us into the future. I'm thinking of the act which adopted the present Canadian flag. The idea was ridiculed at the time. A new flag, it was argued, would deny Canada's history. I'm thinking of the act that established universal health care. It provoked predictions of dire consequences from much of the medical establishment, threats of doctors on picket lines, or worse, of the medical community abandoning the country. I'm thinking of the act that abolished capital punishment. The population firmly opposed that one, but parliamentarians held their ground, the high ground as it turned out, and as they predicted, we have seen murder rates fall rather than climb. I'm thinking of the adoption of the metric system. Each one a controversial change when proposed, yet I would put forward all things we turn to today to define ourselves, to explain ourselves to others when we try to explain how we might be different from our American neighbors or our European ancestors. There was another piece of legislation passed in those halcyon days, which I realized recently is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. And that is the Official Languages Act, a law that gave Canadians the right to receive service from Crown corporations and the Government of Canada in English or French, to be heard in federal courts in English or French, and to, well, there are many other provisions. It was a law which attempted to nudge Canada to become a functioning bilingual country. Now, this was an unpopular piece of business at the time. A lot of people who lived outside of Quebec hated the idea of a bilingual country, hated the idea of spending public funds on French language schools, for example. Well, a lot of water has gone under the bridge. One of the things that law established was a commissioner of official languages. There have been five. The sixth, the present incumbent, is the distinguished writer and journalist Graham Fraser. And I've been meaning, this year being the 40th anniversary of the Language Act, to give Mr. Fraser a shout to see how he thought things were going. Well, I did that recently, and we had dinner together and then spoke on the phone. During those conversations, there were three. Mr. Fraser was delighted to tell me that there is no longer any serious opposition to the idea of Canada as a bilingual country. Canadians like the idea, he said. The polls are consistent about that. And as far as the law is concerned, he said, we aren't doing badly. 90% of the government jobs that require people to speak both languages are filled by people who have passed their language tests. And 3 times out of 4, if someone anywhere in the country asks to be served in French by a federal institution, they are. It's not perfect, said Fraser, but it's a long way from where we were 40 years ago. I remember 40 years ago, there was a popular made-in-Quebec film which recounted the sorry tale of a Quebec family who drives to Alberta to see the mountains and are rebuffed at every gas station and lunch counter because they speak French. Those days are happily over. Fraser says he's not happy with everything. Air Canada's not perfect, he says. Neither's the military. And border crossings are not always as they should be. But, he says, when taken as a whole, there is much to celebrate, especially when you move beyond government obligations. He was moved, he told me, watching the last 2 Winter Olympics to see young cross-country skiers from Alberta, still panting from their medal-winning races, giving interviews in both English and French. Now that's a real indication, he says, that learning French is not just something high school teachers or deputy ministers do, but everyday people, people who would not need to learn French as part of who they are or what they want to become. There are, said Fraser, all sorts of small ways in which French and English Canadians are connecting. Look how engaged French-speaking Quebec has become in university football. There are great football rivalries between the L'Université de Montréal and Laval and Bishops and Concordia. And it's happening in immigrant communities as well. The example of the last 2 governors general has been profound on the immigrant communities. We've had 2 women, both who came from other cultures, who are able to participate fully and eloquently in both French and English. Fraser was smiling when he told me that the greatest interest in French immersion in Vancouver is in the Chinese community. They asked for an Alliance Française office in the Chinese Community Center, he said. And there's more. The chairman of La Société Franco-Manitobaine is from Senegal. It all sounded pretty impressive to me. Well, said Fraser, we have met many of our goals. The thing that concerns me most these days is that we haven't transcended them. For the next hour, we talked about English Canada's awareness of Canada's French reality. Listen, he said, we are hugely fortunate to have this entire society that operates in this other language right at our doorstep. It has a literature and a vibrant music industry, and a TV industry, and a film industry, too. We have this whole other culture, and it's unique to this country. There's not a French-Canadian culture anywhere else in the world. It's a French culture that has been worked on by Scottish and Irish and Norman influences. And it's as vital and interesting as any other culture in the world. And what we don't seem to realize is that it's ours. Yes, we're fulfilling our obligations under the law, but we're not taking ownership of our French-speaking identity. He has the wind in his sails now. In 2004, he reminded me, Denis Arcand won an Oscar for his film The Barbarian Invasions. It is a wonderful film, and it had more viewings in Australia than in English Canada. In 2007, there was another Quebec film. It's called Les Trois Petits Cochons. It'll never win an Oscar. It's a broad farce about 3 guys and their problems with women, but it was made in Quebec, and it attracted huge audiences in Quebec. So many people saw it in Quebec that it was the most successful Canadian film that year. It was shown in France and Belgium and at the Seattle International Film Festival, but it was seen by very few people west of the Ottawa River. And that is because neither culture, neither French Canada nor English Canada, thinks of the other as their own. Those are 2 Canadian films. All Canadians contributed to them, and all Canadians should be watching them with subtitles or whatever they need. I've always believed that it's Canada's fundamental duality, the coming together of the 2 European cultures and their collision with the First Nations, the grand coming together, that's what makes Canada exciting and different. That, in my opinion, is what laid the groundwork for this country to become a place that can include and embrace the idea of the other. Our essential fundamental differences have worked on our collective subconscious. Since European settlement, we've had to make allowances for the other culture and language, all of us, First Nations, French, and English. We've sometimes done well and sometimes mucked it up, but it's something that we're used to working with. And because of that, we have become comfortable with this idea of diversity. It's a fundamental part of who we are. Ah, said Fraser, but what we haven't done is take ownership of the other. We need to expand our sense of who we are to include the other parts of the country, to say, this is me, but that is me too. We talked two or three times, Fraser and I. The last time was on an afternoon when American President Barack Obama had seized our attention. As we said goodbye, Fraser pointed out what might be Obama's biggest contribution. What the election of Obama has succeeded doing in America, he said, is to have enlarged the American us. Since he won the election, there are elements of America that were previously viewed as foreign or marginal or not us that have become part of the American family. For Americans now, this is us. We are this. There is a long silence in our conversation. He is right. We haven't been as successful with our sense of the other. We have been tolerant, and these last 40 years accommodating too, but we haven't yet said they are also us. We haven't yet said that music is our music, and our literature, and our movies. We haven't yet embraced the most fundamental truth about us, that they are us, and we are them. And that, said Fraser, by way of the last word, is my biggest challenge.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.